granted. I think it is going to take a concerted effort for Democrats who we historically vote for to earn our vote, as opposed to just assuming that we're going to give it sight unseen as we have in the past. There's a younger generation that's very, very actively involved and very, very interested in these politics that say that you have to do something affirmatively, proactively, and progressively in order to earn the native
vote. Jossie Ross, we want to thank you for being with us, member of the Blackfeet Nation and an editor at Indian Country Today, author of How to Say I Love You in Indian. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. We have three job openings, broadcast engineer, director of finance and operations, and director of development. Visit democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR, Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to all of you. Yes, today is, well, it's the end of February, but it's not the 29th yet, because although I think we have a 29th this month, it's not the 29th. It's today is a little bit less than that. It's 26th. And so hope you are having a great week here in Dearborn. We had a little snow, but that's the way it is in Michigan winter. It might probably melt in a couple days, so let's not worry about that. Well, what is this show? This show is the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR, as well as in the studio. I'm joined by John Conroy, who is our WHFR news director. How are you doing, John? Just a minute. Now you can tell us.
I'm doing very well, Jay. How are you?
Okay. Well, we're going to get right on to the stories from the Dearborn Press and Guide. And this is from last Sunday. We'll just go through this quickly. Got some news stories, of course. I mean, that's why it's called the new WHFR Journal. The stories have to be new, not something that we did last week, certainly, or that you know from the major media in Detroit, because why would you listen to the show if you've already heard it? There you go. That's what we think. In the Press and Guide from last Sunday, a little story about the Bridge magazine, which, to my knowledge, is it's actually not a publication, a print publication. It's actually just online. But Bridge magazine is a journalistic effort of a number of a very, very good journalist, objective journalist, who want to put in extra time to do research on and to evaluate stories. And this is something that most of the major commercial news media have given up on. They've given up on having full-time reporters. In many cases, they've given up on having anything other than just rewriting press releases. And all they do is that. You know, and so they have no time or no money to pay anyone to do investigative reporting, where they actually do fact checking and background checks on all the stories, and in some cases find stories that the major media haven't done yet. Why? Because they have the time to look around and see what's going well and what's going badly. One of the things that's going well is, of course, some educational endeavors in the state of Michigan, some high schools. And among the 44 in the state named as academic champs are four of them from this area: Star International Academy, Henry Ford Early College, thank you very much, that's right here at Henry Ford College, Riverside Academy North, and Crestwood High School. We mentioned last week that Crestwood is getting ready for a bond issue vote coming up in May of this year, but you know, the high school part anyway. There's other schools in Crestwood District out there, but the high school certainly has done a lot of things well and has got the attention of Bridge Magazine. Also, it's interesting that the magazine takes into a number of factors. They say that 60% of the students of Crestwood High School qualify for free or reduced lunch. So that's criteria of looking at economic opportunities and therefore a connection to the media and computers and things like that outside of the schools. And so it's pretty good if they're able to do well in spite of having people who are in a lower economic segment of the community. And so congratulations to them. Hubbard Ballroom is undergoing renovation. That's in the Dearborn's Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. Plans call for keeping this area, also known as the Dome Room, and using it in the new facility. 15 years later, the ballroom is getting an extensive renovation to meet the evolving needs of the community. Okay. The renovation will transform the 15,000 square foot room into a banquet hall with mahogany paneling. Ooh, on the walls. That's real wood, John, isn't it? Mahogany? I've heard rumors of real wood, but usually no one can afford it. A refurbished hardwood floor. Well, that's important for dancing in that. Yeah. You have a nice wood floor. Encircling soffits. It says soffits. Encircling soffits. Do you know what a soffit is, John?
How's it spelled, Jay?
S-O-F-I-T-S.
S-O-F-I-T-S.
Could that be like little sofas along the outside? A mini sofa is called a soffit? I don't think so. I'm sure a lot of people know who are listening. Don't call in. We can't answer the phone. We're too busy here but talking and reading the paper at the same time. But look that one up. Boy, that's a big question there. But they're going to have encircling soffits and new accent lighting. And they say this renovation will create a one-of-a-kind facility in Dearborn. Again, it's being done for your city. The capacity is going to be 800 guests at one time in the Hubbard Ballroom. In about the last 10 or 15 years, I have noticed two or three other major, that is relatively large, banquet facilities to pop up in town. I think two of them specifically on the east side of town. But I think there's also a new one on the west side of town. So it's not just Park Place. There, of course, they've been around for many, many years, one of our fine banquet hall facilities. I'm not sure. I have a feeling this is 800 guest capacity. This could be the biggest in Dearborn. And they do say it's a one-of-a-kind facility in Dearborn. So I don't know if it's just the mahogany walls or the 800-person capacity, but certainly it is going to be huge, as a certain presidential candidate likes to say. And the renovation is expected to be completed in early April. I assume this year, even though it's only a month and a half away. Oh, my gosh. So they're going to start, stapling that mahogany paneling on the walls right away, I guess. And it must be a big floor to refurbish. Well, refurbishing it. So it just means polishing, buffing, sanding, whatever they do in whatever order. But that wouldn't take too long.
No.
Okay. Yeah, a couple of days to afterwards to put some new, what they call a sealer on it or whatever.
Sealant and new coating.
Thank you, John.
Yep.
Whenever I need a word, I just look over to John Conroy, and he has a word for me.
Except for soffits. I don't know what that is.
I should know that. I've heard that before somewhere. But
somewhere along the line.
And they're called encircling soffits, so they're not just soffits, they're encircling. Ooh, they go all around. So, that's wonderful. Also, a nice story. It says, Big Brother, Little Brother, blind self-advocate mentors gifted 13-year-old. This is a story about Faraz Abu-Ida. I just usually call him Faraz. His 13-year-old fellow whose mentor is Kadar Farhat, Kadar we've had on this show several times. In fact, he was a student for a while at Henry Ford College, did very well, and was a leader, and he's still an advocate for the blind and for people who are blind getting appropriate training to increase their usefulness to themselves and also in terms of finding jobs and so on. And so it's just a very nice overview story. So congratulations again on just continuing to get attention for your cause. And so congratulations to Kadar Farhat. And a nice story there. President's Collage Concert is, they're reminding you last week, but it's coming up tomorrow night at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. Tickets cost $15 and are available at the Performing Arts Center's box office, which is open even today from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. And in fact, tomorrow too, even before the performance gets started, although even when it gets started, I'm sure you can buy tickets. So it's going to be a big group of the several different musicians and vocalist groups from Henry Ford College. And it really is a fantastic, exciting evening. And it will it'll be something very special if you maybe didn't get around to, 2 weeks ago, a Valentine event with your loved one. Maybe you'd want to do this. And the money does go to help support, I think, the music department. Doesn't say there right now. But goes to a good cause, because after all, Henry Ford College is a good cause.
Oh, yes.
In general, yes. But that's going to be a lot of fun. It's called the Collage Concert. And you'll have a great time. So it starts at 8 o'clock tomorrow night.
Collage, meaning continuous, I believe. Because that's what happens in those type of concerts. They go from act to act, and HFC music faculty members Rick Goward and G. Kevin Dewey and Randall Knight conduct those groups throughout that concert.
Okay. Well, that's one interpretation. Collage also means somewhat similar to a montage, sort of a putting together of things
all
from
coming.
Many different sizes and shapes of the music department performing groups is what you're going to hear. Also, it's sort of a pun, because it is the college concert, but it's a collage concert. It's not just one concert for all. It's all different kinds of, whether it's a big jazz band or it's a smaller combo or it's a large vocal ensemble or a small quartet, they're going to present it all. And it's going to be great fun. And the usual leaders from Henry Ford College, Randall Knight, Rick Goward, and G. Kevin Dewey are going to be the ones in charge of organizing and directing that. So that'll be a lot of fun. Okay, so we're moving on in the papers here. Let's see. Got to get the old stories out of the way first. Old business is always the first thing on an agenda.
Yes.
And then we get on to new business, leave the exciting new things for last. Now, if it was, again, a commercial media, radio, or TV show, we'd go for the top news, the sensational news, right away. And then give you a teaser on something that's sensational that we don't do until the very last. So, but we don't do that. All right. Times Herald actually published the story that I think the Press and Guy picked up on in some way about Bernie Sanders campaigning here in Dearborn at Local 600. Yeah. What I thought was interesting was that I came across a website which had this story, but it was rewritten and changed, but it was in France, and it was in French. Luckily, I can read French, but the point is that this story about Bernie Sanders coming to what they perceived was, and it's true, the largest single population of people from the Middle East in America, that he's making an appeal here, and he was the first one to get here, by the way, to talk to the people from the Middle East. And it's just interesting, not this exact same story, but this event was covered worldwide.
Yes.
So obviously people from the Middle East especially would be interested to know that we have a presidential candidate that is not afraid to come and talk to them and ask for their support and their vote. In the past, by the way, and you say, well, he's a Democrat, they're always for Democrats. Not necessarily. I've gone to some rallies in Dearborn for Ron Paul when he was running for president. I think in 2012 and also in 2008. He got huge turnouts. We filled the largest multi-purpose room in the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center with his visit. And, of course, Dearborn. These days, according to the statistics, is about a little over 40% Middle Eastern heritage. So that's, but that's who I saw a higher percentage than that listening to Ron Paul. Of course, Ron Paul, especially as a libertarian type within, although he was within the Republican Party for the last 20 years of his life, of political life, he's still alive. Was that he was against foreign wars, and particularly the one that got us involved in, of course, in the Middle East. And so he wanted us to get out of there. And, of course, a lot of people who have friends and family who live in the Middle East these days, innocent friends and family, they fear for their lives because a lot of innocent people are being killed, maybe by Russian bombs in Syria, or maybe by our drones elsewhere, as well as Syria. There's collateral damage, as they call it, and maybe some of you out there think that's okay. In fact, what's the purpose overall? I think we have to look at the bigger picture. And I'm just saying that Ron Paul got a tremendous reception. Maybe it was his anti-war in the Middle East status. Bernie Sanders is against these kinds of foreign wars too. I'm fairly sure of that. So that would again endear him to people that had friends and relatives in that area at this point in time. Okay. The Times Herald reminds you on their front page, of course, the Wednesday edition of the State of the City address by Mayor O'Reilly that was scheduled for last Wednesday, February 24th. This is another reason to read your weekly Dearborn papers if they do come on Wednesday for you, and the Press and Guide also on Sundays. But you got to read them right away because maybe there's an event in there that's happening that day, that afternoon or that evening, so you can't wait to read it. Well, in case you didn't read it, you didn't miss it. Because of the weather, inclement weather, although my personal feeling was it wasn't that bad, just a little bit slushy Wednesday night. It certainly did get icy and more snow came down. And, of course, many different institutions and businesses were closed in Dearborn, such as Henry Ford College yesterday on Thursday, and as well as Dearborn Public Schools, too. The word as of just 15 minutes ago from cityofdearborn.org is that an alternative date has not been yet set. They haven't decided when they're going to do the State of the City, which is kind of unusual to me. It's not a matter of rescheduling a large banquet room or the big Guido Theater. It's just usually the city council room there, which I don't think they're using for too much else, except the mayor was intending this last time, for the first time ever, is to actually have sort of a panel discussion of about five or six people from the community representing different interests to give their report about how they saw the city and the situation in the last year and the future, as well as his making comments too. So my guess is the reason why we don't have another date quickly is because they're trying to reschedule these six people because they've probably got other stuff to do maybe on other Wednesdays. So we'll find out about that. I did listen to the State of the City address by the mayor of Detroit, Mike Duggan. And I know, John, you heard that too.
Yep.
Maybe you watched it on TV. I heard it as an audio version a day later. I thought it was a great presentation, a really good speech. Detroit has some major problems, but he came off with a few good lines, telling the legislature that, first of all, the debt of Detroit Public Schools was all their fault, after all. It's their fault. They were the ones that got us into this, not to mention the five emergency financial managers that they put the school district under, who apparently have done no good in the last 7 years. They're more in debt and with more problems, and the schools are in worse repair than ever before.
And he showed. He also spoke about great worries about the city's pension plan in a few years from now. But the fact that they're paying, they're still able to pay pensions now is beneficial for the city of Detroit.
Yeah, there'll be something like $83 million in the red, if you will, in the pension plan by 2024, if they don't start to, or they have to make the first payment of $83 million or something in 2024 if they don't start planning on it. Now, what he says he's going to do, he's also thinking of suing the financial advisors during the bankruptcy process who looked at the wrong statistical tables about how much money is needed to keep that going. In other words, that deficit has been unplanned for by anybody and was just, I guess, made known to the mayor in recent history, last 6 months maybe. And so he's going to try to sue them in court. Maybe they'll pay for some of the money because they did their job badly. I mean, they were paid probably millions and millions of dollars, and they used the wrong computational tables to figure out how much money was going to be needed to keep the pension plan afloat. And, of course, the pensioners, my goodness, they've already had cuts to that income. They're already put into place. And I almost wonder if they had used the right table, would they have cut them instead of, it was 10 or 20%, they would have cut them 50% or something like that? Well, that wouldn't be sustainable. That wouldn't even be fair because we're talking about people in many cases who are already retired. So I don't know. But I thought he gave a great speech. It took almost an hour. It was only interrupted once or twice by some people calling out things from the back. And he had to stop one of the people who were interrupting, and he said, if you just let me talk, you'll understand how I've never, like they were saying something about emergency financial managers, and he said, I've never been in favor of emergency financial managers. Don't tell me what I should be in support of or not. I've never been in favor of emergency financial managers. Let me speak. And so I thought he did a good job of handling the people that couldn't hold in some of their comments. But there was only, I think, three times that he had to pause briefly, and it wasn't a matter of, I don't think anyone directly against him, but a lot of people have concerns.
Yes, and I also believe that he is leading, or he is going to be directing more of what the city council is supposed to be doing, not the other way around, which has happened with many mayors in the past.
Well, right. He has really good plans, and so far, according to him, again, according to the numbers he gave us on Tuesday night, they've really worked out well. Why should we in Dearborn be concerned about Detroit? They're right next door. That's the whole thing about local news, is you need to be concerned about what's right next door, because that does affect us in many ways. So, I think Detroit, with Mayor Duggan, is in good hands. You got somebody who's very hardworking, and definitely is doing the best they can. So look forward to the State of the City address by Mayor O'Reilly whenever they can get it rescheduled, and we'll try to get back to you. We will have it on this show. We will maybe have to edit it down slightly, but we will include it, the speaking parts, not the applause necessarily, or the noticing the prominent people in the audience. I usually edit that out. I'm not concerned about that. There's always prominent people in the audience, I assume. And most prominent people to me are the people listening to the show. So we were going to have it for this Friday if it would have happened Wednesday night, thanks to Craig Schuller at the city of Dearborn. He works with CDTV and other audiovisual needs, multimedia needs, as they call it now, for the city. He's also now the voice of Dearborn on the phone message voicemail system. So when you get into the menu system at the city of Dearborn, after you get to the general number, you hear a male voice, and that's Craig Schuller now.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Very, very good announcer type voice. Let me
tell
you.
Very good.
Yes, okay. He is. So I'm fairly sure with Craig's help that we will have that. If it is on a Wednesday, we will have that on the air here, even if we can't get it promoted the week before. Because I hate to promote something that I don't think has a chance of happening, or I don't know is going to happen. But we should have that on this show, and therefore on the podcast for you to listen to anytime, as soon as that happens, of course. All right. It's looking here. Finally, there is a big story, if you wanted to read about it, about the mayor's art awards. All the awards, not just the one I got. Thank you very much. But that story was in the Times Herald last week. And finally, we get the big-time story that honors all of the artists and volunteers and special supportive groups in the community that are also important to keeping all of the different arts going. And so thank you for Times Herald of getting that in the paper. Okay.
Animal shelter?
Yeah, we will get there. Okay. Moving to the next paper, I think that's all done there. Big story on the Wednesdays, that is 2 days ago, Wednesday, February 24th. Press and Guide. New home, of course, the official key. Why is the official key got to be so big? It's a photo op of people, so I bet they have one big key template that somebody cut out of plywood, and they painted it gold, and they use it for Santa Claus, and they use it for any other event where the city is giving the key to somebody, and then, of course, they take it back afterwards because, you know, it took them a lot of time to do that. Yeah, but Mayor Jack O'Reilly handed over the key last Friday, that's the 19th, to the former Amtrak station, which had become part of the new Dearborn Animal Adoption Center. That's the new name of it, Dearborn Animal Adoption Center. It was another paw forward in the Raise the Woof campaign.
Very nice, Jody Rampala line there.
Well, cool. It was actually the people at the the shelter, as it used to be called. It won't be called the shelter, the adoption center now. And in fact, about that name, the Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter has, besides going for the new facility, which hasn't, they haven't raised all the money yet, but they're working on it, a couple million more, and they'll be there. The Friends group have changed their name to expand their outreach. And so for more than 20 years, the Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter has worked hard to take care of animals who no longer have a home, no matter the reason. They made a deal, a proposal to the city of Dearborn to allow them to be the people to run the shelter in Dearborn. Under a small payment from the city, but they promised to raise additional funds as needed and so on. And they have done a great job and improved the facility, but it's just too darn small now. Okay. And it says that while that home is in Dearborn, it isn't just the city that supports the shelter or reaps the benefits. Okay. And according to the Friends of the Dearborn Animal Shelter chairman, Mary Ann Wright, more than 60% of donors live outside of Dearborn. The shelter has made an impact and has an important reach beyond the city's limits. We want to reflect the mission of love and care for the animals that come through the door, says Wright. Because of that reach, the organization has decided to change its name to Friends for Animals of Metro Detroit. Friends for Animals of Metro Detroit. The shelter also likely will have the same name unless a donor comes forth for naming rights, similar to the Berman Center at the Michigan Humane Society in Westland. So that probably will cost you $1 million or something, get your name on it, I don't know, but any excuse to get the money for the animals, of course. And is that a Democrat or Republican thing? No, I think that's kind of bipartisan. And I don't know why it can be bipartisan to help the animals, but we're not bipartisan to help the human animals. Just think about that. You know, it's just wrong.
Yes, we're more united in helping the animals than the human animals.
That's a better way to put it. Thank you. Yeah, see, we always have a second person here in the studio. We have a second chance to get it sounding a little better, a little more clear.
Another shot.
Yeah. Now, their website won't change, which is dearbornanimals.org. Dearbornanimals.org. Okay. And but apparently it says it will change, I'm sorry, after the annual Mutt Strut in May. Then it'll be metrodetroitanimals.org. Ooh. Metro Detroit Animals. Now, I wonder, isn't there an animal shelter that's run by the city of Detroit? I wonder. I mean, how big a reach are we going for here? Anyway, it's a larger facility. They've always had a larger than Dearborn purpose, and they still have to raise out of the $5.7 million for the new shelter, new animal adoption center, because the idea is not to shelter them, not just to keep them there, but to get them a home.
Get them a home and get them healthier as well.
So it's good. The name really focuses clearly on what they're all about. New Animal Adoption Center in Dearborn. They've already got about $3.7 million, so they just got $2 million more to go. Just $2 million, folks, and they can start building. And again, that'll be in the area of the former Amtrak station, the little station. Remember the little one where you could just step in the front door of the station and you're practically on the train.
On the tracks,
It's just another 10 feet and you're on the track. So it was a very, very small train station. But the new train station, of course, is further west and is doing quite well, thank you. And this will be a very easy location for people to get to, but also to see. As they're going back and forth through the city.
And you could definitely feel the rush when you were standing inside that railroad station of anything coming up.
Well,
you had to react.
Yeah. They have said that they will make sure that the new building will be somewhat soundproof so that the animals won't be waking up every time a train passes or starting to howl and whine and so on. And what is that hellacious sound? When will it go away? Humans can adapt to weirdness like that, but poor animals probably would like some soundproofing, I think. Okay, but that's very nice, and all the people that came by, we had Debbie Dingell there and Susan DeBaggia from Dearborn City Council, because she's the council president, so she has to go to events like this when they hand out those big keys. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Greenfield Village is honored. Boy, a lot of nonprofit groups, there is a group, a blog on the internet called Recollections, which tries to bring back history through accurate costumes and clothing. So they've indicated the top 30 historical preservation societies in the United States, and Greenfield Village is listed as number 4 in the blog. According to the blog, one of the best things about the village is that it is an open-air museum dedicated to the economy spurred by Henry Ford. Ooh, the economy spurred by him. It says it is unique because visitors can explore historic homes and drive around in historic cars. Well, they can't. They're passengers. They can't drive themselves. But getting a first-hand look at what life might have been like during the industrial era, and that's the early industrial era, folks. I think pretty much before, it's turn of the century, pretty much. There's not too much that goes on into the 1930s, for example, in my recollection. I could be wrong about that. But a great resource in the community if you haven't gone to, if you haven't decided to support all these great nonprofits, like the Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter, soon to be the Metro Friends for Detroit. The Metro Detroit Animals. There's also, of course, Henry Ford Museum, Greenfield Village, also known as the Henry Ford. And great value there in getting an annual pass for the family, I think. And I can plug a nonprofit on non-commercial WHFR.FM. Okay, well, now we're into the news stories, John. It's so exciting. Oh, boy, the news stories for the day. Okay, the Homelessness Marathon was last week Wednesday night on WHFR. Many of our volunteers came in overnight to, as they say, man the board, almost get on board, but they have to handle the sound mixing. Even though the signal is coming in via satellite, they had to be here for that. In case there was technical problems, of course, we wanted to have human operators here. But they also did a little completely unscientific poll of the homeless and formerly homeless people who appeared on the show. And they asked, who did they support for president? So over those 14 hours, they only got about 22 people who answered that question. But the results were Bernie Sanders, 13 votes. Hillary Clinton, 7 votes, and Stein, which is Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate, got 2 votes. So I think it's amazing that the homeless are almost, or formerly homeless people, even knew there was a third party. They weren't totally out of the loop there. And it looks like, by the way, that Jill Stein is going to be the candidate for the Green Party for president this year, as she was in 2012, the first year she ran for the Green Party candidate for president. But they haven't had their nominating convention yet. And since they've been closed out of primaries, that's right, the people that do these primaries, these debates, they make the primary elections and the debates, they pretty much make sure, since they are Democrats and Republicans, that no one but Democrats and Republicans can be part of that process. I mean, it's a plan. I mean, it's not a plot. It's not a conspiracy. It's just an outright plan to keep these people out. Why? Because if anybody found out about either the Green Party or the Libertarian Party or another so-called third party, alternative party, political party in America, they might actually vote for them. That's the fear. And they're scared silly, I guess, because they absolutely will not allow any other party to be in election primaries around the country, nor they've set it up so that all debates, televised even, will not include these people. And so I think that's pathetic. It's awful. But anyway, so that's Jill Stein got 2 votes. Bernie Sanders got 13, almost twice as many as Hillary Clinton, from the homeless and formerly homeless, but completely unscientific, non-representative kind of poll. Sad to say that after 18 years, though, Jeremy Alderson, I just got an email from him, has said that he says, I do believe the broadcast was good overall, but has made me face the fact that our reach exceeds our grasp with no solution in sight. So I don't know if they had extra bills to pay that they can't afford to pay, whatever. For this reason, he says, I've decided that barring some unforeseeable miracle, this broadcast will have been our last. And we think that's very, very sad. About 6 years ago, Detroit was the host city, and WHFR volunteers went down to help the broadcast and to help the shelters down there to hand out blankets for the homeless in Detroit. We'll never forget that that evening. And it was amazing that Jeremy Alderson, for all these years, has been able to keep this going. And he really doesn't have any major, obviously no corporate support, no great political support from anyone, because it's one of those problems that go on, and neither Dems or Republicans want to talk about them or get involved directly, because, you know, the media constantly makes out that if you're homeless, it must be your fault. And John, you were here helping, of course. What do you think about the marathon?
Well, I thought it was I thought we did a very nice coverage or monitoring of the whole night, and I want to make a little editorial comment, even though we know, Jay, what about editorial comments?
Yes, all the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily the opinions of anyone here at Henry Ford College, faculty, staff, administrators, or students.
Yes, but
we hope so. And right. We thank them for allowing us to express our opinions as fairly as we're able to.
But what I was interested to say is that we have great cooperation with Dearborn and Detroit to help our four-legged animals in shelter and adoption and health care. And yet we still have the amazing or huge homelessness, et cetera, other problems. Why not more pooled resources to help the two-legged citizens?
Yeah, and if you listen to the 14 hours of the marathon, and I'm sure many of you could not, but the simple fact is, folks, that there are answers that other cities have put in place. So it's not an unsolvable problem. It's a problem that can be solved by people making the right choices and redirecting funds from bad choices, like sending the cops down to beat up people or capture them, put them in a van and dump them outside city limits. I've heard about that happening, not necessarily in Detroit. But, you know, so, I mean, that takes time and money, too. So if they redirect to solving the problems, there are answers. There's programs that will resolve almost 100% of homelessness. And there's no excuse to have it continue, except people just don't care who are in the power who make these decisions. And so I thought Homelessness Marathon was something to help get awareness going. And we at WHFR, our mission is an alternative one, that is to try to give you the music, but also the news and information you can't get elsewhere on your dial to the extent of our, you know, volunteer staff. I mean, we don't have any extra money or resources, but we have a lot of spirit, and sometimes we can pick up on stuff and share it with you that makes it all very special. Okay, well, so RIP Homelessness Marathon, but let's keep the cause in our hearts, and let's do what we can in the future to help to keep it on the agenda of all our elected politicians. Okay, I thought I might focus on Metro Times, but oh my gosh, what a fantastic story there is in this week's Metro Times, which came out on the newsstands Wednesday around town, and it's free. But as I've told you for week after week, if you're not picking up a copy somewhere of the Metro Times, you're not taking advantage of the great alternative and high-quality journalism that they actually do. There's at least 8 stories and 4 or 5 additional well-written, well-expressed opinions on important stories of the day in the Detroit metro area. And if you're not reading it, you're not finding out this information. One story I printed out, and I had to make the type a little bit smaller, 'cause it's like 16 pages. 16 pages for a newspaper story, and it's in the Metro Times. And what is it all about? It's a great overview of, first of all, Governor Snyder's Flint PR offensive is in full swing. That's right. Well, let me share that with you. After several weeks in which the governor was seen at all-white photo ops 100 miles away from Flint, or during which we heard the story of his wife's lavish birthday cake decorated with luxury items, it seems the governor has finally gotten his PR act together. Gone is the cake-eating, glad-handing, off-key imagery. We're beginning to see what must certainly be the handiwork of the image burnishers. Yesterday, and the story came Tuesday afternoon, so it must be Monday afternoon this week, says, yesterday we received a press release that was professional, soothing, and designed to give the impression that things in Flint are improving, and heck, maybe they weren't even that bad in the first place. It was about low, low, low lead levels in Flint. It all but screamed in the voice of a TV used car salesman, "Hey fellas, look at how low these lead levels are." For the first time, let's set aside, the writer of the story, Michael Jackman, says, let's set aside any suspicions that the EPA, MDEQ, and the Snyder administration would do anything to skew the actual results. With so many eyes on their work, they're probably adhering to best practices and not pre-flushing household water lines before taking test samples. You know, like they did before. That's not my parenthetical comment. That's from the writer here. Apparently they did that before, so they had better tests. And the story goes on. But would the Snyder administration present the data in a misleading way that allows the layperson to think the problem isn't that bad? Or maybe that it never was that bad to begin with? There's a motive here, a powerful one. If the Snyder administration can convince enough people that the problem is a small one, it won't go a long way toward helping people of Flint, but it will help Snyder's tattered political career, as well as the prospects for the emergency manager law he and his GOP pals pushed through over the objections of the people of Michigan. Remember the people of Michigan? Folks, you and I out there, we actually voted it down. We didn't want that kind of emergency manager law where the governor could just choose, for no particular reason other than he thinks they're in trouble, to completely take over. This is a dictatorship, you know, if he wanted to. Take over the running of any city and appoint his puppet dictator to run it for him. And, you know, Governor Granholm had that power, too, under a different law. But she could only do it if certain situations were present, like bankruptcy and, you know, other clear indicators that they needed outside help. No, the law that Snyder and GOP put in place was, if the governor says, just thinks, he just feels that somebody needs an emergency financial manager, it's a done deal. And all your elected officials, mayor, council people, they have no power whatsoever. Well, that was so crazy that in an election vote, a ballot proposal, we voted it down. We, the majority of the people of the state of Michigan, voted that down and out. And the legislature went back and voted it back in with a little financial funding bill, a little funding bill tossed in. And according to the weird way that state government works, if you have something about funding in there, the people can't vote it out by, you know, public proposal, a ballot proposal. So we can't get rid of it. Oh, legislature could, but they wanted that power, that it'll send that little dictator in and make those little cities, well, those big cities like Detroit, make them bow down to the power of the governor, you know. And I'm sorry I'm exaggerating it, but it's really awful when you have a legislature that apparently doesn't give a darn about what the majority of the people of Michigan want or need, for that matter. So the PR notice that the Metro Times got, they rightly have said it's pretty strange, and it's twisted and it's spun, as they say in public relation terms, to make it sound that everything is really fine. Mm-hmm. And in fact, one of the statements was an astounding 89.1% of the samples of water of Flint were below the action level. And the article says, isn't that terrific? Well, no, it isn't. You see, those results are the equivalent of a failing grade. As federal guidelines will tell you, if 10% of the homes are above the action level of 15 parts per billion, the city is out of compliance with federal safe drinking water standards. And as for lead levels below 15 parts per billion, they aren't necessarily anything to cheer about. The water in Detroit has 2.3 parts per billion. In Troy, it's 1.1 part per billion. That was the median lead level, we wonder. What was the median lead level, we wonder, says the article, of those samples below the action level? Don't bet your bippy it was as low as Troy's. And heck, according to the World Health Organization, quote, there is no known level of lead exposure that is considered safe, unquote. But, hey, you could be a gloomy Gus on the side of science, or you could jump on the Snyder bandwagon, where these results are encouraging, even upbeat. Although concerns remain, of course. And what are those little concerns again? Oh, yeah, the fact that the water legally is not considered safe to drink. Other than that, things are really looking up. Okay, so that's kind of like an opinion. That's a right. Somewhat snarky opinion piece by Michael Jackman. But it is, I think, appropriate and fair to point out that these press releases that often get covered verbatim by the other media are spun so far from what the facts, the hard facts really are, as to be not helpful to the solution of the problem. So there you go. All right. And what's also in there? Okay, well, good news is, and Jack Lessenberry has an editorial, but that takes 3 minutes to play, so I'll just summarize this from the Detroit Metro Times also. They report, and maybe this was in the national media or the media, commercial media, maybe John heard this. Decision has been delayed about the nuclear waste dumps in Canada near Lake Huron. Okay, so here's how they write this story. It's a Colleen Kowalewski that wrote it for the Metro Times. And it was actually last Friday when it got in the Metro Times website. But she says, what is a newly elected politician to do when faced with a decision as complex as it is controversial? Stall, of course, is the answer. In the latest installment of the ongoing saga of proposed nuclear waste facility on the Canadian shore of Lake Huron, Minister of the Environment and Climate Change Catherine McKenna has once again postponed a final ruling on the plan, according to the Toronto Sun. October, December, March, one deadline after another sailed past without a decision on a plan more than 5 years in the making. Now the company planning the dump has a deadline of its own. Ontario Power Generation, that's the name of the company, has until April 16th to submit a timeline for providing the additional information McKenna has requested, which includes an updated analysis of potential combined environmental effects. and a potential nuclear waste management organization site located close to the proposed site, an updated list of the company's commitments to mitigate any identified effects from the project, and a study into the environmental effects of alternate sites. So there, until then, though, April 16th, no new deadline has been set for a final decision, which represents neither victory or defeat for all involved. The mayor of Sarnia, Mike Bradley, and he's pretty close to the dump or where the dump is going to go. He says this about the whole situation, quote, "It's sort of like getting a kiss from your grandmother. It's nice, but it doesn't mean a lot." Oh, those Canadian politicians, how sweet they are, aren't they? But a Port Huron resident said, "I'm so geeked." Her name is Elizabeth Zimmer-Lord. She's a member of the Great Lakes Environmental Alliance. Oh my God, I'm so happy. So happy that there was actually this delay of this facility. The problem is, as I see it, is a lot bigger than just the dump site. There's already, is it five or six nuclear reactors there that, and I think four of them are still functioning. The other three have been sort of mothballed, but that's very unfortunate because they're not going to be very effective in actually trying to improve anything in that area. They're just going to sit there. There's no place they can take the spent fuel rods. And as I said, it's an accident waiting to happen because they've already got the nuclear reactors there all together in one place. Hard to believe that they've got five or six nuclear reactors, majority of which are still functioning right there, and it's all within a mile of Lake Huron. Kind of ironic, somebody pointed out in the story in the Metro Times, and this one goes on for 10 pages, that they go to all this trouble to get clean water to come to Flint via Port Huron. And then Port Huron, the Lake Huron, gets contaminated by radiation so that nobody can drink it. And, of course, downriver, guess what? When it gets to Detroit, because that's the way the river flows, yeah, we're not going to be able to drink any Detroit River water either. So this is just a terrible, terrible problem, and it's Canada's problem legally. But, boy, we have to keep our opinions out there for the Canadians to see. They do think that because Stephen Harper, who was all for the plan of building nuclear reactors everywhere and dumping the stuff from them everywhere as cheaply as possible, please, that he's not the Prime Minister of Canada anymore, and that the new Prime Minister, Trudeau, is probably not going to let this happen. He's definitely not in favor of unbridled nuclear contamination. So we're hoping that the right politicians are in office over there, but we need to keep the effort up there too. Well, what's happening in the Dearborn area, John? I bet you've got some things here or in Downriver you want to mention. Well, we've got 10 minutes before Highway 61 gets started. Special guest going to be on the air today, and you want to stay tuned for that. Absolutely. In fact, it's the person who, in our humble opinion, recorded the best local blues album 2015. That's right. Wow. And she's here with us today. Her album just came out towards the end of last year, and we're still heavily playing it. And a great album, a great local artist, too. And so that whole story and Kitty Love, we'll have that for you. And Highway 61 starting in just about 8 minutes now. So exciting.
Yes, okay. Jay, I've got a number of lighter notes here. And as we both know, one of our favorite topics is food. Even though I've scaled way back on the amounts and the types I consume, but we do have 5101 restaurant having its Polish and Central European theme all next week.
Okay.
And the dinner, the hours of operation are 11:30 in the till 1 p.m. for lunch Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And dinners from 6 p.m. till 7:45 on Wednesdays and Thursdays. Mm-hmm. That should be very nice. And
if people want to call for a reservation, they should call
313-206-5101. And am I on, Jay?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
Sounds good to me.
All right, great. And then on another food note, we are doing our fish fry tonight down in Gros Eel, Sacred Heart Fish Fry, with all the bells and whistles of such, and a musical entertainment provided by Barry Von Englund, who is a very fine guitar player and singer. Another Autorama is going on this weekend, Jay.
Oh, no.
Saturday or Friday and Saturday, and I'm not sure if it's on Sunday as well. But
I don't doubt it.
Yeah. But it's I believe that's in Cobo Hall, and
sure.
I have a number of my GM compadres who have not only will attend but have a booth with motorcycles mm-hmm. and hot rods and
a lot of customized vehicles.
Oh yes,
yes. There's also usually a lot of special guests. Of course, that's a for-profit event, folks. But if you love the Motor City, if you love the Motor City, you probably love automobiles. But then watching, seeing the customized versions of the cars that we know and love is also very exciting. Okay, and locally, we've got who's coming up tonight at Joe's Coney Island.
Right, Joe's Top Dog Coney Island. We've got the Rich Michaels Trio that performs every week. But as a special guest, we have Kate Patterson, a very nice, I would call her a smooth jazz vocalist, and her husband will be there as well. Mm-hmm. They're performing at a number of different venues these days, and it should be very entertaining, and they do a great job at Joe's Top Dog with that jazz program every Friday night from 7 to 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Okay, let's take a listen here. Let's see. We've got about 4 or 5 minutes to go, and here's a good comment. Again, it's maybe I should have played it after we did the story about Detroit, but here's Jack Lesenberry's comment about Detroit's fragile future. Just to make the point once again about how important what happens to Detroit happens to all of us in the metro area. It is our shared concern, should be our shared concern with the legislators and with our governor, too. But here is a very important statements from Jack Lesenberry about Detroit.
I'm Jack Lesenberry. 7 years ago, our biggest concern in Michigan was the domestic auto industry. The question was, could it possibly survive? 3 years ago, our worries centered on Detroit, which was about to plunge into emergency management and bankruptcy. These days, the Detroit Three are no longer the Big Three, but they're thriving and making billions. Detroit's out of bankruptcy and is perceived as dramatically improving. As a result, it too has been pushed to the periphery of our vision, which is otherwise fully consumed by the crisis that is Flint and the growing stunned realization that Donald Trump is increasingly likely to be the Republican nominee for president. Last night, Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan took to the airwaves to deliver his annual State of the City address. Much of what he said was deservedly self-congratulatory. The number of people fleeing the city has slowed. Homicides are down and demolitions are way up. The city still needs jobs and money. But there's another looming problem on the horizon, a huge, nearly $500 million pension shortfall the city needs to begin paying off 8 years from now. Give Mike Duggan credit. Previous mayors might have swept that under the rug. After all, he probably won't be there in 8 years. But instead, he's forcing Detroit to confront that now, which is the responsible thing to do. The problem is compounded by apparent errors made by the grotesquely overpaid consultants who advised the city and its emergency manager through the bankruptcy process. Turns out they used the wrong tables to make their calculations, and the city needs to pay $83 million more in 2024 alone than originally thought. Duggan is thinking about suing them. But in the meantime, he's behaving the way responsible officials should do, but seldom do. He's budgeting as if the city will be liable for that money, setting some aside, trying to reduce or eliminate the impact on city services. The bottom line, however, is that the city needs more dough. The best way to accomplish that, everyone agrees, is to attract more jobs and people. There are two things the legislature needs to do, and the first won't cost the state a thing. People who, like me, live elsewhere but work in Detroit pay a non-resident income tax. Too many private employers in the city don't withhold these very legitimate taxes. The legislature needs to pass bills that would require withholding for any Michigan cities that have municipal taxes. Perhaps even more important, Lansing needs to come up with a fix for Detroit's public schools, which otherwise run out of money in April. The governor's proposed a good plan to allow the schools to start fresh and eliminate a crippling $500 million debt. This will cost taxpayers, but not nearly as much as bankruptcy would. But it's being held up in the lower house by ideological fanatics who are insisting on destroying the teachers' union as a price for rescuing the schools. Detroit's recovery is still fragile and depends on its eventual ability to attract new residents and families, and you can't do that without good schools. How this all plays out is vitally important for all of us. When it comes to Detroit, the whole state should be watching.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
So there's Jack Lessenberry speaking about Detroit's fragile future, making a lot of good points. And again, if you can go to even WDET.org and listen to Mayor Mike Duggan's State of the City address, it's really very educational and a lot more information there than you'll ever read anywhere else because it goes on for 48 minutes, I think. But it's very important to hear it from a great politician and a great collaborator with a lot of different people, a lot of, Republicans, Democrats. Without that collaboration, never would have been happening. So, as we conclude the new WHFR Journal, as I said, Highway 61 is going to start in just a few moments here. Special guest Nikki James, if I didn't mention her name before, she's going to be live in the studio with Kitty Love talking about her album. You'll be hearing some tracks, of course, as we've been featuring it. Well, for a couple of months now, anyway, on Highway 61. But I wanted to tell you about the Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair. Holistic Fair is a celebration of spirit and life, and we have body workers, readers, also sometimes known as psychics, and people that are vendors of all kinds of associated materials to the metaphysical arts, such as books and crystals and all kinds of
tarot cards.
Tarot cards. Yeah, they'll sell the cards and for a small extra fee, give you a reading too. And it's really just for information. It's something certainly non-traditional, non-collegiate. All of the metaphysical arts, but since we do have a monthly program on Tuesday Forum, second Tuesday of each month from 1 to 2 o'clock, hosted by Mike Holloway, that features in-depth interviews with local practitioners of the metaphysical arts. We sort of an outreach thing because it's really a fun, informative affair. So if you can circle your calendars, only a couple of weeks away, Saturday, March 19th, here at Henry Ford College in the main Student and Culinary Arts Center, 5101 Evergreen Road here in Dearborn. And it's only a $5 admission. All that money goes to WHFR. Thank you very much. And hope you can make it. The hours are 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Again, the date, March 19th, 2016, for the Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair here at Henry Ford College, sponsored by WHFR, WHFR.fm. It's WHFR Dearborn you've been listening to. John, thank you very much for being on the show today with me, as always, straightening out what I say.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, Jay, and I also want to put in my weekly acronym for RED, which is Remember Everyone Deployed, and that's to wear red on Fridays.
Okay. Yeah.
Remember our veterans. You
know. Let's get them undeployed as fast as we can, folks. Yes. Get them out of harm's way. Let's find a way to do that. Okay, it's time for Highway 61. Thank you very much for listening.